Mr. Gray, Real 5. We were discussing minds, Mr. Gray, and telemiles particularly. You were saying that a human being, in effect, could walk over them, or even a motorbike.
Motorbike, I mind. I think it's over 40 pounds of weight to set them off. And actually, the funny thing, and I'm terrified of them, we're doing this, going down this rubber track with a 1500 weight. We go over the mines, on it, cutting the mine out, we're squeezing the mines out. the port had been swept, misplaced, you know, it hadn't.
Did you get an eye for spotting anti-personnel line?
You know, the Germans, as I say, were very, very meticulous. But now and again, on the ground, it's caught in a bush or a twig. You see, it was blue paper. That's what the technique is of that thing. Instead of putting the blue paper, I mean, but forgetting to throw it away instead of putting it in his pocket. The same. When you saw them, you know, their minds were in the book, you know. But telemines, you know, you had the main jetty at the top of the centre, and the 2 o'clock from the handle, you had the one on the side, and the 8 o'clock on the meat, you had another jetty in it, booby trapped in it. They never booby trapped them all, because I don't suppose they could afford to protect them, the time as well as being expensive. But when you found a mine, you look around and look for a civilian feature, like in the big water in the house or in the tree. And that's where the spoon of deer in mind for myself before the war.
Were you trained to dismantle them yourself?
Oh, yes.
How did you do that?
Well, all I did was show the safety wire. Safety pin. And the wire we used here was from the corned beef, you know, the wooden corned beef box. But by my burning wire. You see that wire for yourself. I took the use. But I was talking to a fella. We had a VJ celebration, commemoration, and a Lou Stannard celebration about a month ago. And I taught this chap and some advanced visualization. I'd never met before in my life, he's a few years older than me. And he's going about the superior of the German weapon to ours. Huh? I don't know if you ever saw an English mine. It's only a quarter as powerful as a German mine. And of course, they always have more to produce. And you know, the Germans had half trucks. We didn't. But the most useless, do you think, in the world, a grand carrier. Totally useless, you know, when you couldn't see what the jelly had. Actually, the Americans copied the German half track and made some lovely half tracks. But the only half tracks I have now were ones that were captured. And we used them rather than brain carriers. But I mean, a fellow we designed a brain carrier could have made a bit to serve in it. Colonel Carden Lloyd, the Carden.
What was the weakness of the brain in action? What was the weakness of the brain?
It was small, the brain carrier. It was slow, the tracks would come up, you know, took a lot of maintaining. Tiny. But when you saw a half truck coming out, you know there's 12 Germans in. You only get four men at the most, including the driver in a Brent. And the half truck was much more maneuverable. Could turn around and the truck wouldn't drop off, you know. I never liked Brent carriers. When I had the running temperature on the Chevy battalion, I had a guy 1500 weights. Better reliable ones, you know. Brent carriers. As opposed to half trucks, you know.
What other weaponry did the Germans have which you considered superior to yourself? You've mentioned the machine gun, now the half-tracks.
The Schmeisser, the green pistol, was a long way better than a Tommy gun, a long way better. You know, if your Tommy gun to be effective, you've got to be within 10 yards of the enemy. But the Schmeisser, you couldn't go within 20 yards, I didn't know, you know. It was much easier to maintain, much easier to keep an action.
What were the mortars like, German mortars?
Well, they weren't as good as ours, mind. They had the better mortars. They had a 7-barrel mortar, and had a more than many. But a mortar is only as good as a fellow with a fired. the same, we had a good motor platoon. We were going to get the 4.2. And again, the 2-inch motor was a great little weapon. That was a bomb later on.
Was that a platoon weapon, the 2-inch mortar?
That's right, a platoon weapon. It was a good little weapon. If the bomb had been a bit more powerful, if the bomb had been like I thought it was a grenade, 5 minutes on the stick, it would have been, would have never been superseded. The 3-inch mortars are very good, and the 4.2s, But the Germans didn't have much in the way of artillery, but what they had used very, very well, man. I remember coming under attack with a 2 and 10 milli. We had a big one in there. And I think they only had one on this particular front, but we're going in the line, being carried by the RSC in wagons, see? Across one of those split willow roads that the Royal Engineers used to build. Because it was the right going area. And we started getting hit by the 2 and 10 milli, a good big gun. That's one or two of them went off the trails, and the loads of earth as big as those log things over there, and all over. That was a danger. And we turned and got off the lead weapon. So, dispersed, going over. Some of the bubbles dispersed as far as Rome. Only mine myself. But I was running all the field trying to, it was filled with clods of earth, And I heard somebody say, come here, Teddy. And I run into a little barn affair. And I counted 70. I didn't get off. I don't know what the stuff was that down to the advisor or what the slave workers. I counted at least 70. And hearing them screaming at the ground. And, when you went up in the hardest circle, I saw the holes in there. The holes won't manage to cross. I can't be silly, I didn't know. And I later heard about the lad of Serrano was had the same experience. A lot of the big stuff didn't get off. Whether it was the slave or it was in Europe or what. And another thing, how we knew we were winning the war was by the dumps the Germans left. Some of those dumps were only 3 months old. The ammunition was only 3 months old. His landed came over, just from Austria down to Italy. Stuff was only, he was still firing stuff later on 1938.
We're talking about booby trapping mining. Did they booby trap buildings, houses? How did they do this?
Well, they have book traps, like a library book. Everybody loved books because we had no radios. And so you got the hotel to blow up and that sort of thing. The fountain pen, them things, the foot clap, when they stood on the thing, it was all sort of thing. But you got the wife of these things. And
were you warned against picking anything up?
Oh, aye. Well, I mean, the road was you have a motor mouth, you weren't officially warned, but the lad was to tell you, I didn't pick your fountain pen, I didn't pick the book up, And if you didn't manage to keep the house, you didn't go upstairs. It's a little flow of the brain,
Through the ceiling?
You still had the odd brain bubble, We wouldn't pop up, the hip of the yoke. The funny thing is, when we took a prisoner, we never took a German. Ich nicht Deutsch. I'll say they weren't German. Some of them were, and most of them were Poles. The Poles fought us all over Italy.
So how did you, where you took a Polish prisoner who'd fought so well against you, did he get a different treatment, say, from the odd German you took? Did you understand why he was fighting for the Germans?
Oh, I would have been all new, that, Put yourself in a pudding in his place, say. Sometimes, if they hadn't lost anybody, if they had any casualties, we'd give them a cigarette, a cup of tea. And they wouldn't smoke the cigarettes. As I've been told, I've British soldiers just to smoke dope. They weren't around. They'd also been, they were terrified of Winston Churchill. In case they'd been shown to be Churchill's victims, for business and all this bloody stuff. I don't know what else was there. Tell lies about it. We were told lies as well, propaganda. Which sometimes you believe, sometimes you wouldn't. But I always firmly believed that Winston Churchill was descended from the Duke of Marlborough. East from here, want the remote is direct from the Dirty Marble, that's clear, Matt, is it? The one is sent from the Dirty Marble at all. Because John Churchill, Dirty Marble, had no brothers or sisters. He had no children. And when he died, the Spencer family took the title over. And then it's Spencer Churchill. But he still came to be descended from the Dirty Marble, which is a big lie.
You said there that you, when you took prisoners, you gave them cigarettes. You gave them cigarettes, providing you hadn't had casualties. What happened when you had a bad time?
Well, you took my prisoners.
Was this an understanding amongst you, or was it an order?
No, it was an understanding. Never order. I mean, the lad took the law in their own hands, as you can well understand. Really, man, you know, if you lost your best friend. It's no good, somebody was already turned out of here and put his hand up after he killed him. Right? The thing about it is, you never forget the faces. You never forget the faces. And I'm 72. Yeah, I'm not sure to be 72 now, but that's the way it was.
And you still remember them?
Oh, I did. I look in their eyes and all that stuff.
Were snipers giving you any trouble?
Yes, yes, often, yes.
How did you deal with them?
Well, the same way. Pick up them, you know.
There was no mercy yet towards a sniper.
I remember with a late bay company, and Major Allen here was sitting in his evening time. And I spoke to him in this very room. I remember the first time I saw you, you had your head in your hands. He said, I lost my company that day. I said, remember, we went up that hill, and all the devil lying was a door on the ground. There was a lad lying on, and four lads on him. You know, they'd been carrying him out, won't it? And this fella shot him on his finger on him, and we did talk to him on the job, and asked him who had done this, and all said the sergeant made of himself there.
What time of the year had you joined the battalion after Salerno? What date would it be?
Back in September. What this time of year?
And that was 1943. After the first action, obviously you moved forward, as you say. Had the terrain changed as you approached the River Volturno?
No, there was flat land, farmhouses there, and then sunken roads. They were the big, they were the bumper, the sunken roads, the bumper.
In what way?
To provide a cover for the enemy. Put on one there, main to other lads. Down and down the sunken road. Met these little children. Little girl about 10. And two other smaller ones. And lady sold out of sleep. Drop a lad. And, I asked that daughter to Tedeschi, where the Germans? Oh, and the Tedeschi. No, none here. And she was right. They fled. They had the boat button there. Oh, the Galliano, that was it. The Galliano. The moved back. And we crossed the Galliano about 11 miles up from the 56th Division. No, that division took a baton, the Black Trap Lumenty. They took a baton all the way to Italy. And never they probably recognised. Oh, the Queen's regiment, the Brigade of Queens. And all I remember saying, D. Queens, and whatever you want to do. They took a hell of a baton.
Moving forward towards your next objective, what was the method of moving the company battalion?
Well, mainly night time, you know, you just...
Didn't move you in the day?
Oh, no, no. No, suicide of what we're doing. Unless you had smoke. Smoke was our best friend, really, you know. I mean, we're pretty sure that Lady Valens appealed. We in a saddle. Completely surrounded by Monikimi, you know. He's completely observed by the enemy. And the company commander wanted to pull out. The colonel wanted to come out. The brigadier wanted to pull out. Well, General Hawkins said no, he should get a thorn in the flesh. But when the two officers were killed, the men came off the cells. There wasn't a retreat, it was a complete. They withdrew, you know. But I was up there for 2 days. And during the daytime, we lived in Sangers, you know, the small hollow brick, which you couldn't dig in, it was too hard. And the only time to get up was the leave was when the artillery fired smoke. with your 15 minutes smoke. Okay? And when the fire smoke goes to 0.15 lines, you're going to have a fire. And you hope you'll be lucky enough, you've got it relieved as well. And the smoke was our best friend, and the evening saw was the best friend. Still is today, I believe. You know.
Moving forward, as I say, advancing in that way, did you have some kind of scouting element ahead of you?
No. Well, you were first. I was often first, you see, and the officer was something like first, but he couldn't afford, because he couldn't afford the officer. He had some cohesion in the platoon. That's why he stayed, and then he left the hot day, and then the fire was so low, and he was he had enough. He just had enough, you know, some lads couldn't cut it as well as us, so other lads couldn't, right? Yeah. Just had enough.
And you saw men who had broken?
Right.
And go out?
Well, they wasn't kind of cowards, by no means. They had enough. I mean, British simply in the line, 10 times longer than the Yankees, the French, the Poles, and the Poles. We were there, they would kill it, they got killed off, and it was not very real about it, you know. Lads had enough.
Was there ways of telling that someone was nearing the verge?
No. I didn't remember that at all. You set out, put your gear on, your buckler, what are you? Come on, baby. You look around and Joe was missing. Well, Joe is missing, you see. Well, you know where Joe is. You know they'll be back after 3 months, buddy. You know. Lads have had enough, man. You know, it. The longest I was in the line was 31 days with a rush here to Cope Mill. That's all the girls there, you know. And when we came over there, we had 3 nights rest. We're back in the line again. Some lad just couldn't take it, right? Especially the money, you know. And thinking about the wife and dying. We heard about the butchery fell up, the US 33 division. Ordered by the march through mud and swamps and all, but he thought they'd just dropped down. You know, why? I guess you wonder why the hell. Didn't he stop all kind of kind of General Marbury and Clark, who was it? Why the hell didn't he come up there, you know?
You didn't see your generals very often, did you?
Oh, General Stormer nearly did, yeah.
That was your divisional, General?
Aye.
Which division were you with, by the
46.
Way?
46. York Tree.
Who was commanding?
General Gilly Hawksworth. He succeeded, what about 2 years? I forget his name, but he sent home because he wrote and told his wife. He hoped he'd have dinner in the place where they had the honey. Freeman Atwood. General Freeman Atwood. He was sent home.
He said he was sent home for, what was it again? What had he done to be sent home?
Well, he wrote and told his wife, he hoped he'd have dinner in the place where they had the honeymoon. So, his was at a date was a room, and he was sent home. And little Ginger took our horses. And he brought his 2 sisters with him, and Miss Raffin. The wonderful maiden ladies, and Miss Raffin. They gave him a 30 in the weight, or a 3-tonner, kicked it up with a mobile canteen. And those ladies followed every laden battalion up to the canteen. And little Ginger, if you're in the line, you saw him every day. Hawkins. He made sure he visited the laden battalion every day. And when he went away, he was safe distance, somebody said, good old Ginger. He turned out of
this. He was highly respected.
Oh, and he was loved. And poor little brother Dan, he's 42. He got promoted to, I think it's called General. He started with what they call a Kimona group, 6 divisions. And coming home and leave to England, he died on a tour trip in Dubai, 42 years old. Unmarried. I presume it must have been attention. Must have been awful for them, blokes, you know, to commit young men a certain death. You know, well, they weren't all patterns. You know, they were very, very sensitive men, like Templar. You know, he worked with his young man, was killed. He was the toughest bug in the army, you know, again, he beat the communists in the Royal Roman Guards. But on Angio Beach, he had his suffered agonies, you know, Templar. And little Ginger was the same, you know. And I've got a fella called Weir from New Zealand. Another twin brother, you know. Didn't say too much of him, man. But But little Lita Hawkins was idolized by the men.
What happened to you when you got to the Volturno?
Well, it's just the same as all it just continued. Look at all the river, all right? But there's one thing that didn't much stick out in my mind. There's one they cut in last in the city. They cut the city from the middle place. It was to be terrified of water. Because the cameras broke outside. And he started screaming for his mother. And he woke the whole front up. And the jury started grazing the room. It didn't mean to him, but he got no all right. Anyway. But that lad must have been a brave lad, because he stood all the division. He stood with Charlie at the end. He still stuck with him, no guy. Think about him. He must have been a bloody brave lad to stick with, the colony of his comrades and all this stuff. But he stuck with him. He never ran away. He never did.
That was just fear of the water.
His fear of the water, yeah.
Did he suffer? Did men blame him for what happened at that point?
Oh, yes, my belly strong wasn't looking at him. But that lad, he never ran away. He stuck with the rifleman, stuck with him.
So you got across the river under some action against you, of course, something that they were fighting.
No, they went all wet, bladed, to went all dry. It was the dry thing. Like we were about over before the all hell broke loose, didn't we?
Where were the Germans in relation to your own situation?
They were on the river banks. And that heavy mortar there too. A friend of mine arrived, I was killed in the trench, the bomb in the trench, him and Captain Yates, out the 70th. We bought the same slip trench, died in Vancouver, and a bloody bomb pulled him in, To be honest with you, I was right there.
Did you have heavy losses crossing the river?
Well, our losses are all as what you call heavy, It was 15, I couldn't, You see what I'm, 40% casualties,
Did the Germans pull out before you got to their positions, or did you have to go in with a bayonet and anything like that?
No, well, they charged the bayonet, Charlie. I mean, they never took your bayonet off. But, as I said, the colonel said, the only odd brave boss, which he was, but he kept the bloody poles going on four steps, the same. He hit the youth lads, those big fine lads in our mind. They hit the youth, the big fine lads.
Did you admire them as soldiers?
I never respect them as soldiers. They were thugs. Murders. That's what I call the German. Thugs, murders. Made up the braver. Maybe because of what they believed in, I showed the enemy respect and defeat, but not them fellas. An half man puts his peace, and they showed the respect and everybody them. I never had married a German as a soldier. Even the day, I've been to Germany twice. I don't respect the German as a man. German man or woman, I don't respect them. Because I was a German, my son was taken German after he left after the Falklands. My son was sent to the Army Air Corps, see? Because in the Falklands campaign, there were no Army helicopters involved. They lost a lot when the convoy was sunk. And Mr. Thatcher thought the campaign was a free air and helicopters. And when the campaign finished, my son was transferred to free air for a period of 2 years. Stationed in Germany, a town called Hildesheim. And I went there to visit him. It's a lovely town. Been flattened during the war, of course, but rebuilt. And they have a huge lake there. One and a half kilometres long and half a kilometre wide, man-made, was made for the first Olympics in 1904, where the German trained, so you can walk around this lake, and about the bottom third is for these private companies that rent the beaches, but you can walk to them. And I had my two grandchildren, my son's children, and I was walking on this lake, a beautiful morning, and I came to the signpost. And I said, I'm on a glider, without going. I didn't know it was new at this point, I think. And this big part of it just came out of the water, There was a father, mother, two children, two relatives, completely naked. And I didn't take any notice at all. And it was nice to see. The other day in England, there was a very Pete and Tom behind every bloody bush. And I just thought, nothing natural. As I walked round to the fancy end, the rich man end, there's a restaurant there, you see. And the two bands want an ice cream. So I walked in and I said, well, I don't know. I went to look at the ice cream and sat down at the table. And about 20 yards away, there's a party of Germans, two men, two of them, middle aged, like myself. Very well dressed, expensively dressed. And, they heard me speak in English. And they started seeing us from 150 years. We were young and not England. I heard Mr. Lynn Barton. When the band finished the ice cream, I took empty toilet in that. I was as well dressed as they were. And I went to the table. Anyone here speak English? And they all did, of course. And the security said, yes, I speak English. I said, tell your friend, you're still a set of Bartons. With the white beard here, but that's the way I felt about him. Why is he so nice to throw an Englishman there? He is an American man. He's like me saying, I'm going to hang out the bottom of the ship right now.
From the Volturno, where did you go then?
Galliano, another river.
What period of time are we into now?
43. November 43.
Was the terrain changing at all? Was the terrain you were moving through changing?
No, to the Volturno, to the Galliano. We get another ship about 20 yards wide by the road by the river bank in the high of Scotland. We had a 6 mile carry with the wounded. 6 miles, up above the tree line. The only thing we were goats. Not even sheep, goats. That's where we built the sangers,
And was this on your side of the river, this escarpment?
No, on the other side.
On the far side?
We got over it, I don't know how we got over it.
What are your memories of that particular action?
Just rain.
Were the conditions becoming more difficult now?
More days, yes.
What effect has this heavy rain on a moving army?
But as I say, effect, you realise that the jury is affected by it as well as you are. Okay? So you're quite comfortable in that. But believe you or me, every item of clothing on, top coat, pantaloons, denims, gas cape, soap of the skin, never ailed a thing. Never ailed a thing. Never took any illness, no matter what I was, I don't know what I was. But never ailed a thing.
So the health... The health of the battalion was good then?
Oh, indeed. Hardtack biscuits, corned beef, corned water when you can get it, You can put the gas cap down to cut the rain water. Because the water they brought up from the barges was. The Kipling said it was corn and it was skunk. But I've already been so drunk, I used to drink the rain water if it brought up nice, But I couldn't make tea to my coffee. Because tea didn't taste the same. But the coffee was of Brazilian stuff, like cold tar. And they made a drink of that stuff, you were getting cleaner.
In this weather, were you getting rum rations to warm you?
The only rum ration I ever got was at Towlaw, County Durham, in July 1943. The weather was so bad, they gave us a rum ration. That's the only rum ration I ever got in the army.
So rum wasn't a prevalent drink in
World War II? No, one of the sergeants, I got a bottle of spirits a month. But being a junior sergeant, I got the gin. The other fellow got the whiskey.
Had you been promoted to sergeant again?
Yes.
And are you still with D Company?
No, I was with the Pioneer Platoon.
What, the Pioneer Platoon, how was it made up?
Originally had four sections of 8 men. It was finished with three sessions of three, 9 of us. We couldn't get anybody to join the pioneers. We had a heavy casualty in the battalion.
And what jobs did the pioneers do?
Pick mines up, mines.
That was your main task?
That's my main. Then it's not anybody, anybody else could blame up, they sent for the pioneers. And the stretcher bodies, of course. And that was it.
What method did you use for picking the mines up?
Helix.
You hadn't got the...
Well, we had a mine detector, but it meant he couldn't carry a weapon. So yeah, evidently he only had the battery still, the mine detectors were late. But as I say, once you found a mine, a telemine, you know, or a stone miner, you knew what the mine's about, and if you said about your work problem, you cleared it cut. You can clear some tape.
How exactly did you use the bayonet to actually
just
find
the guns themselves away? Gently, very, very gently, because you know, the antenna on the detonator, you know, or your fingers, but it's dry, sorry.
Were there accidents?
Oh, I had a lot of the head blown off, you know. Sometimes, you know. We had four men killed one afternoon at the same time. But Cletus Minefield was cut the mines, but they picked up telemines in his house. And I don't know what happened, they say, but the four of them were sitting down on the cup of tea, I was, and must have had about five or six.